Welcome back, everyone, to the Dealing With Life Stuff podcast. My name is Fernando.
And I'm Randy.
And this is the Dealing With Life Stuff podcast.
We're back. Yeah. We both have had just super crazy busy months, partly due to the industry, partly due to you moving, and I had some family stuff that has been going on. So we have had no real prep time to figure out a topic to talk about or have some fun controversial debates. So we're just here shooting the shit again.
Yeah. I mean, what else do we have on the list? I mean, you know, for future episodes, for people to look forward to, mm-hmm. What is it that we were thinking about, you know, talking about? Do you remember?
We have a list somewhere, but it's pretty much like, I mean, we could talk about whatever hot topics are always out there. You know, we could talk about abortion. We could talk about, I don't know, economic policy, something like that. Who knows? Social mm-hmm. policies, social issues, what's going on there?
Yeah, I think a lot of the list that we came up with was, for the most part, well, not for the most part, but there was a good portion of it that was hot topics, and then the other stuff was more focused on, like, it was really getting, like, knee deep into some of the more critical issues.
Yeah.
Like critical race theory and mm-hmm. that kind of stuff.
Yep.
That gets into the philosophies and just the different, you know, routes that life can take us.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to like a personal life, but also just our ideas and thoughts in regards to like Marxism, communism, mm-hmm. socialism.
Yep.
And, you know, what that means, what we think that means to us.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things that we've seen in history already happen.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not historians, right? But I think you do pretty good reading.
Yeah.
When it comes to understanding the evil that's out in the world.
Yeah.
I know you recently finished the I don't know if you would call it a trilogy, but the 3-part series on
The Gulag Archipelago. I read that last year, which is a literary investigation into the Soviet Union and what happened. And it's by Alexander Solzhenitsyn, won a Nobel Prize for it. And it's one of the hardest books I've ever read, just from like having to have the emotional fortitude to get through it. And then I just finished a biography on Mao as well. And boy, Mao was a huge monster. Like Mao may honestly be the most evil person in human history. Wow. He has a higher body count than Hitler and Stalin combined. And he enjoyed torturing people. He enjoyed hearing about people being tortured. He encouraged torturing. He encouraged mass killings. And in 1960, 1961 alone, 32 million people starved to death from a famine he created so that he could sell grain to other communist countries or give it away to build some clout. And so he could try and ultimately fund his superpower program to become a nuclear superpower. And then ultimately he wanted to go to nuclear war with the world to try and conquer it.
That's insane.
Yep.
It's crazy because, I mean, sometimes we read these books and it's this 1961, 1970 something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm reading a book right now called Prisoners of Geography. And it talks about how some countries recently got their independence,
mm-hmm.
right? In the 40s, in the 50s, some in the 60s. And so, you know, usually you read about history and you're like, oh, in the 18 something, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, that was hundreds of years ago.
Yeah.
And you start reading these dates and you're like, oh shit, like, you know, 1961, mm-hmm. 32 million people starved to death. 32 million people starved to death.
In a 2-year span.
Yeah, in a 2-year span. And you think to yourself, shit, like that was, like my parents could have been alive, right?
Yeah.
My grandparents were alive or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so like those kind of things, they put life in perspective that, you know, people make the joke, oh, we're in 2021. How could we still be thinking about these things?
Yep.
No, man, like we're still 50 or, you know, 60, 70 years away from our own issues in America mm-hmm. when it comes to civil rights. And we just think that, you know, everything is back in the day.
Right. Yeah.
It's not that far back.
Yeah. The people who believe that there's no way a genocide could happen now are extremely naive. And I'll say that with absolute conviction because it could totally, it's happening still to this day. I mean, China's still killing between, 30 and 60,000 Uyghur Muslims a year right now. And they just pick a new minority every year. Like they don't care. They just want to, you know, kill.
Yeah. And I'm not super, you know, well educated when it comes to stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I know it's happening all throughout the world.
Yep. When North Korea's a country concentration camp too. And yeah, it's a lot of them. I'd say the majority of these dystopian countries are communist or communist adjacent. So people can figure out my stance on communism pretty quickly.
What do you think, you know, in conversations with your friends, our friends, why do you think most people are so naive when it comes to the things that are happening in the world? Is it just a lack of education?
It's a lack of education and not pretty much a lack of education and or willful blindness to what's going on. People want to live in this dreamlike utopia, but it's not real.
I mean, we're pretty blessed to live in America.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
even if you have it pretty bad, like, it's still better than a really big portion of the world, not the majority.
It's better to be at the bottom of America than the top of most other countries.
Yeah, which is insane to think about.
Yep.
And I don't know. Like, I talked to some friends, and depending on which one I'm talking to, some of their reasons is, well, I got plenty of my own problems to worry about.
Uh-huh.
Or I just don't care about that particular stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the most common thread that I get from my friends is, Fernando, if I consume that content, knowing how bad the world is outside of my world, I'm going to go crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, my anxiety is through the roof already. And, like, you know, what am I going to do knowing that something's going on in China or in Africa?
Yep.
What's your rebuttal to something like that?
Fucking get your act together. It's not that it shouldn't be that complicated, but it's, hey, recognize that there are a lot of problems and a lot of atrocities committed every day in the world. And the best thing you can do is get your own life together.
Yeah.
Because if you can't get your own life together, then there's no way you'll be able to stop anything.
But in regards to, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
But in regards to, you know, because the thing is, we don't have to know what's going on in the rest of the world,
mm-hmm.
but I think it gives you a lot more context and perspective on your own personal life and the life that you live in America.
Absolutely.
Right?
Totally agree.
And so, you know, for people who say, oh, I just don't have the time, or, you know, blissful ignorance, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
you know, I get it, but I think it's your own personal responsibility. And granted, I was part of those people too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, a couple of years ago, like, I was like, I'm not a political person.
Yeah.
Or I don't know about history. Or I don't know about that. But I love history. I love politics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that at that point in time in my life, I just didn't care.
Yep.
But I knew it was important. Mm-hmm. And I think when you make that decision to go and learn more about the rest of the world,
mm-hmm.
your perspective on life changes dramatically.
Right. Yeah. Perspective is a great way to think about it, because the more aware you are of horrible things that have happened in the world, the more emotional fortitude you can have and the more gratitude you can have.
And it also gives you perspective. Again, we'll go back to the word perspective and context. Like, if you don't know how bad something that you're trying to do in your own personal life has been and can be
mm-hmm.
in the rest of the world, you're not able to kind of just follow the timeline that you're coming up with, right?
Yeah.
And so what I mean by that are, you know, again, some political agendas or political, you know, laws, whatever we're trying to put to make policy,
mm-hmm.
you know, the people who are making these decisions for us, there's a statistic that came out that the majority of our politicians haven't left their own state.
Yep.
And most of them haven't traveled internationally.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're using other countries as reference that they've never visited.
Right.
Or they have no idea what other countries are doing. And so they're trying to bring these different agendas and implement them in America. And they don't realize, like, hey, if I do this, then these other things are going to happen based on history.
Right. Well, yeah, they don't look at the potential consequences of their actions. And to your point, a lot of people... perfect example, a lot of people reference the Norwegian countries as like, well, they're socialist. No, they're not. They're capitalist countries and they have some socialist policies.
Yeah.
To say that they're a socialist country is ridiculous and preposterous.
Yeah.
They are not. They are capitalist, and that is why they do well. We have the statistic data, the empirical evidence. Capitalism works. There are flaws, absolutely, but it is better than anything else we've ever tried.
I don't know where I heard this. I mean, I heard this in high school, but we don't have, it's not the best government, but it's the best there is.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Well, capitalism isn't necessarily government either. I think it should be, because I don't think I'm coming around to the idea that
framework. We can call it a framework.
Sure. Yeah. I'm coming around to the idea that government in and of itself is an immoral being. Like, honestly, and we'll get into that another time, I'm sure. But the book I mentioned to Fernando that I'm reading right now is The Anarchist Handbook by Michael Malice, which is a compilation of essays by different anarchist thinkers, including Murray Rothbard and even Leo Tolstoy, who wrote War and Peace, which I didn't even realize he was an anarchist. Mm-hmm. But they make a lot of interesting points that some of them I've considered, others I haven't. But the largest theme throughout it is, why do we have these people representing a group of other people? They can't both represent us and be our adjudicators. It just doesn't make any sense.
They're what was the word?
Adjudicators. The ones who are writing the rules for the people that they supposedly represent. But if they represent they can't both represent the people and be the adjudicators.
So what would be the, as opposed to what?
As government, are you talking about government as opposed to what?
Yeah.
No government.
And what does that do for people?
Opens the free market. Yeah. It becomes full free market.
I think we'll have to, because this is stuff that gets me all like riled up.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to do I need to do my research so that I can come with this and this and this up to you.
Because
I feel like, but in this particular topic, we probably not necessarily opposite spectrums.
Uh-huh.
Well, actually, yeah, opposite spectrums, because one side is government, the other one is no government.
Right.
And I'm for government, and mm-hmm. so we're definitely in opposite spectrums there.
Yeah, and I'll frame it just from a logical argument. Anybody that rules over another without their consent is immoral. Government rules over people without their consent, therefore government is immoral. That's it. That's my argument.
Okay.
And when I've talked about anarchy to some people, and I'm still learning about it too myself, so my opinion is still amorphous and needs to be solidified, but a lot of the common arguments I hear against anarchy are really criticisms of what we currently have. They're like, a mafia would rule the world. Well, what do you think we have now? It's a government full of corrupt people ruling the world. Like, it's pretty much the same thing.
I feel like it'd be worse if we didn't have it.
Well, at least the mafia is honest about dishonesty.
Yeah, but I mean, more people are being taken care of with the government.
We'll have to look at
the data.
We'll
have to look into
the data. That's a statement we'd have to verify.
And we'll have to dive into that, but I think that'd be a good something for you all to look forward to.
Yeah.
Randy in front of talking about government.
Yeah. Look up, I would recommend The Anarchist Handbook by Michael Malice was an Amazon bestseller within 2 days, and he had no publisher. He just self-published.
Did that recently come out? Or?
Yeah, in the last few weeks, which gotcha. I think is very telling of a lot of people's willingness to look for other options.
I think people have been consuming so much information in those last 2 years
because
mm-hmm. of everything going on and people being locked inside.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many conspiracy theories out there right now, and
mm-hmm.
people are just on edge when it comes to, the government forced me to do this and the government forced me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, there was the execution of the way things happened in 2020
mm-hmm.
could have been a lot better.
Yep. We could have had Anthony Fauci not lie about things to the public.
I won't get into all that because, again, I haven't done my reading, but
yeah, if anyone's interested in what I'm talking about, look up the Freedom of Information Act request on Anthony Fauci's emails and read through them.
Yeah. I read some headlines, but I haven't gotten a chance to read those articles.
He was openly talking about one thing to his friends in private and then saying another thing to the American public, which I don't trust liars. End of story.
Simple as that, right?
Yep.
Yeah. What was I going to go with this? So pre-COVID.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can talk about government pre-COVID, and then we can talk about government with COVID and then mm-hmm. post-COVID.
Yeah.
And see where those things end up.
I think it sucks in all three instances.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that. We'll find out.
Yeah. Yep.
We'll be able to talk about it, but how do we segue from here?
We can talk about that. You're getting your gym in here. So do you feel that having a new house now with a garage gym is going to help encourage you to exercise more? Or what do you think is going to shift your mindset from having a home gym versus having to go to an apartment gym or somewhere else?
I think the difference is, the apartment gym, I used to use that a lot because it was just a walk away, 2 minute walk away from my house, from my front door. But then COVID happened. And then even before COVID, I felt like some people in the apartment complex were really dirty. and then COVID happened. I became hyper aware of it because
mm-hmm.
I'm not necessarily like a germaphobe.
Mm-hmm.
But I am to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And anyways, it just escalated everything. And but the fact that I'm going to have a gym in my garage now is going to remove any limiting
excuse
or any excuse, but also like any reason, any bullshit reason that I give myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, I can't drive 20 minutes to the gym and then 20 minutes back
mm-hmm.
and then take a shower and then go to work
because mm-hmm.
I'm wasting an hour, right? I say that in quotation.
Yeah.
Because I'm on the road mm-hmm. And I don't have to do that. Now I can say, I'm going to wake up, I'm going to work out, I'm going to go to work, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no wasted, time in transitioning from one to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, I could have definitely just done home workouts and worked out either in the garage or in my living room.
Yeah.
It's just, that's not what I'm used to.
Yeah.
And so to me, that's...
And it's not as effective.
It's not as effective, and it's not for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely think, again, privilege to be able to have a gym in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm excited, man.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's so what are the main staples of equipment that you feel are necessary for a home gym?
Pull-up bar, squat bar, and a place to do deadlifts.
Okay. So just the main compound lifts.
Yeah.
Yep, I would agree.
And then kettlebells.
Kettlebells, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was telling him I love kettlebells.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything with like barbell, kettlebell, dumbbell, that's my jam.
Yeah. It's just the ruggedness, you know, like it's a different, like just slinging around weight.
Yep.
It just makes you feel a certain type of way.
It does.
Whether you're a man or a woman, I think.
Yeah, when I've always looked at it, I heard this, gosh, when I started getting into exercise, but it was on some bodybuilding forum, but it was like, you know, no matter how shitty of a day it's been or how shitty things are going, 200 pounds will always be 200 pounds.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, you're goddamn right it is.
Yeah. Well, like the gym doesn't give a shit.
Right.
Like 200 pounds to anybody is 200 pounds. Like there is no racism. There is no nothing like mm-hmm. when it comes to, you know, the weight's treating you a certain way. Like,
yeah, the barbell does not discriminate.
Yeah. It'll kick your ass no matter what you look like or, yeah, or how out of shape. If you're out of shape though, it does get worse.
Yeah.
200 pounds is 200 pounds, but 200 pounds to an out of shape person.
Yeah.
Feels like 1,000 pounds.
Right. Well, 200 pounds tells you the truth.
Yeah.
It's like, you're out of shape, bud.
That's one thing that I've always loved about the gym is it humbles you and it reminds you like, hey man, you're not putting in the work.
Because
I feel like in industry and, you know, the job that we do or no matter, even relationships, like you can bullshit a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. And you can pretend you know more than you know. You can pretend to know the certain people and you can kind of weasel your way into opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the gym, like, if you don't put in the work, like that PR, you can't bullshit that PR unless you have fake weights.
Yeah, right.
And even then, it's not the same thing.
Yeah, you have to develop legitimate competency to gain anything from the gym.
And that's one thing that has been very evident in my whole life is whenever I don't work out, whenever I'm not, you know, in quote unquote good shape,
mm-hmm.
even though I may be overweight, but I know I'm in good shape, I just get depressed. I get mm-hmm. more anxious. My decision-making skills are not there.
Yeah.
When I give presentations, like, I get out of breath.
Oh, really?
And so, like, it's these little things like that, man. Mm. Like, when I know I'm in good shape, everything is elevated.
Mm-hmm.
My relationships, my friendships, the way I execute work, jiu-jitsu, I mean, everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's funny because, well, it's not funny, it's sad. When I give a presentation online or even in person, like, I'll be talking about my topic, mm-hmm. and I'll get out of breath.
Wow.
And then I go into this, like, cycle of self-pity.
Mm.
And then I, at the end of this, like, super long tunnel, I come out to, people are judging me because I'm a bad presenter.
Mm.
And it started because I was running out of breath
mm.
when I was giving a presentation.
Wow.
And it's sad, right?
Yeah, that's interesting. I've never, like, even considered that that could happen, but that must have been, like, super kind of jarring almost. Yeah.
And it's happened a lot with Zoom calls because I'll be talking and then my allergies are really bad and I can't breathe and then I have to pause
because mm-hmm.
I can't catch my breath.
Mm.
And so, you know, I've had to like work it into as a joke when I present to certain people. I'm like, sorry, guys, I'm out of breath. I'm talking too fast. But I know it's because I'm fat.
I mean, honestly, I would make a joke like, sorry, guys, I'm fat. I need to
I dropped that too. With certain people, I'll drop it in.
Oh, yeah.
With other people, I feel like they're a little bit more sensitive to stuff like that,
mm.
whether it be the audience or whether it be because, you know, again, depending on the comedy these days is very hard, you know?
Yeah.
Like some people get offended by it.
Yeah.
And so I'd rather not, you know, do more harm than good in my presentations.
Yeah. That's interesting that you have that perspective on it, that you'll take the less aggressive route. And that, I think that's the difference in our characters because I'll make the joke if you're offended or not because as we've talked about before on the podcast, I think being offended is a choice.
Yeah. Well, the thing for me is I agree with that statement.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is from a perspective of, I'll call it leadership skills, if you will,
mm-hmm.
not that you're a bad leader. I'm not saying that at all. It's just different leadership, right?
Yeah.
Is I'm going to need that person's input
mm-hmm.
following up with the presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I trigger them now, for lack of a better way of saying it,
mm-hmm.
I know they're not going to fully engage
mm-hmm.
and then they're going to give me less than what I'm asking for at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's little things like that. Like I'll have to know how to do it. And it's almost like manipulation, because sometimes sure. if you want to trigger the person,
yeah.
fuck it, drop the joke and
right.
let them get offended.
Right. Well, because I look at it sometimes as cognitive behavioral therapy yeah. in terms of exposure therapy. Like, listen, the world's not a nice place. Like, yeah. I'm not going to openly go out of my way to be a dick to you. I'll crack a joke. And if it offends you, we can talk about it. Mm-hmm. And I can help understand your opinion more. And hopefully we can have an exchange of ideas. But I'm not going to censor myself for your feelings. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Because to me, that's a dangerous route to go down.
No, I would agree. I think that the position that I take in is more of a, what is my role mm-hmm. in this particular situation?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, again, we're going off of one specific example here, but... And sometimes I'm like, you know what? It's not my place to tell them it's a shitty world.
Yeah.
So I'll just let it be for now.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. And that's, yeah, that's just a difference we have. Cause yeah. I feel that if I get the notion that somebody doesn't understand it's a shitty world, I feel obligated to gently help them understand, but also inspire them with hope that, hey, yeah. it is a shitty world, but we can do something about it if we take care of our lives and our families and our communities as yeah. individuals.
Which goes back to the whole gym thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I was a different type of person and I wasn't taking care of myself at home,
mm-hmm.
in this particular instance, the gym, my inability to just get it done in the gym and get in better shape can cause me to, instead of seeing it as a joke because I'm out of breath,
mm-hmm.
get frustrated, and then that triggers into a different emotion,
mm-hmm.
and then I end up taking it out on everybody else.
Mm.
And so, like, hey, you know, certain person, you're not doing your part, and hey, other person, you're not doing your part.
Yeah,
I still do those things, but it would exponentially get worse because I'd be taking out my own frustrations and inabilities to get shit done in my life
mm-hmm.
on them because
mm.
I have control in on this particular case, right?
Yeah,
and I feel that those type of things happen more frequently than not
mm.
where people project their own insecurities and project their own problems onto others because they feel like they have the control there.
Mm. And that's an interesting thought. That kind of reminds me of something Travis repeats often, which is speed of the leader, speed of the pack.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of, you need to set the example, and yeah. It sounds like you feel that whenever you're not upholding yourself to your own standards, it's hard to be the person you need to be for the people you're leading.
It takes more work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have to, on top of, you would think that having to go to the gym would be more work,
mm-hmm.
but that's the least resistance. Like that's the hardest path to follow.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the front end, yeah, you're saving yourself of not going to the gym and you do whatever you want. But on the back end, you're having to self-coach yourself as you're going through these insecurities of not being in shape and losing my breath and all that.
Mm.
In addition to being the person I still have to be.
Right.
So I'm doing two things.
Mm.
Rather than just getting in shape, and then whenever I have to be the person I need to be, yep. I can just be that person.
Yeah.
Without having to drop the joke and do all these other things. Does mm-hmm. that make sense?
Yeah. 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 For me, I kind of have the opposite problem sometimes is I'll push myself too far often. That's the norm for me mm-hmm. is I'll sleep 4 hours a night during the week just because I'm working so much and I have so many things I want to do. And it makes it challenging for me to have to make decisions sometimes when I'm super exhausted. Yeah. But I also look at it as a growth opportunity is if I can build the fortitude to make these decisions even while tired and make good decisions and think clearly, then it'll help me in the long run once I'm able to have that time set aside to rest and recover. Because it's the old formula of stress plus recovery equals growth.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just not good at taking enough recovery time. But I'm taking mine next week, starting Friday.
But I think it's also, you know, worth noting that you know what's going on.
Mm.
Like, you know, like, hey, if I sleep more, I can maybe output a little bit faster.
Yeah.
I think the harm really comes in when people are just naive to the idea that, well, I'm functioning now. Like, why do I have to rest more?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, like, if you do rest more, you can output better.
Yeah.
And so whatever took you, you know, 6 hours before, you can maybe do it in four.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Six. Yeah. Not
yeah.
four.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's just stuff like that. Like, I think there's a lot to say that you know what's going on.
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes people don't know what's going on. And like, that's where the true harm comes in.
Right. And I'll even tie it back to what we've talked about before about, you know, learning what the dark side of humanity is. And to me, I can look at that and be like, wow, these people suffered. Like Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, for example, one of the best books I think everybody should read. He had this great outlook of, yes, despite my suffering, I'm choosing to find meaning in everything. And I look at something that someone as incredible as that, to go through something as horrific as that, as the Holocaust, and to come out with such a silver lining outlook. I'm like, well, if that person can push himself through that kind of hell and come out a good person on the other side, then I can push myself to do whatever I need to do and still come out a good person, as long as I'm willing to find the meaning in my work and push myself to be a good person. It's tough.
Oh, it's tough, man.
Yeah.
As you were talking about that, not that I wasn't listening to you, but the thought of rain came to mind.
Of what?
There's rain. Okay. There's like the rain coming down.
Okay.
There's a quote like learn to dance in the rain. Mm-hmm. Right. Like that's a quote that I remember. But I was thinking, you know, some people can get upset that it's starting to rain.
Mm-hmm.
And you can be thankful that it's raining because you're about to get fed.
Yeah.
Because without the rain, you don't get the vegetables and the fruits and the things that you're going to consume mm-hmm. on the back end. So yeah, you know, it rained, it ruined your picnic, but be thankful that, you know, other people were praying for rain.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you may be upset, but it's a matter of perspective. It's, you know, this situation may be difficult, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, there's somebody else who was blessed because of this situation happening.
Yeah.
And maybe the whole Viktor Frankl thing, it takes a lot more, you know, emotional fortitude to be able to find that logic similar mm-hmm. to the rain.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason I was bringing the rain example is because it's a little bit more tangible because it's more like
okay, relatable. Yeah.
But Viktor Frankl's, you know, situation, there's a lot of thoughts I have to go through mm-hmm. for you to be able to say, you know what, I can relate to that.
Yeah. And I would say I definitely have, I guess, an advantage because I've seen so much death of close personal family. Like my aunt died, you know, a few weeks ago, which was the issues I've been dealing with. But you know, I am sad that she's gone, but I'm so grateful for everything that she meant to my life and all the good things she brought to it that I wouldn't have had if I had never met her. So, you know, while she's gone, I'll meet her again on the other side, but I'm just immediately reminded of all the things I'm grateful for having her in my life.
Yeah. Well, it's a matter of celebrating death, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We're all going in that direction, I think. Being able to have that thought in your head and, mm-hmm. and know, to your point, you know, celebrate what mm-hmm. she brought to your life.
Yep.
Rather than being upset that she's gone.
Yeah.
Like she was part of your life and that's all there is to remember.
Yeah.
And
now I, you know, she helped put me in a position where I can utilize a lot of the things she brought to my life. Yeah. And I owe that to her and her memory to be better and be a better person. And I shared a quote when I talked about it on Instagram. I shared a quote from Phaedo by Plato, which is a Socratic dialogue. And if no one's ever read the Trial of Socrates by Plato, 100% recommend it, because Phaedo, the final part, is all about death and how, as philosophers, we should always be willing to die but never actively seek it out, because death ultimately brings us closer to the truth. It's an interesting thought and very not necessarily easily understood because it didn't make sense to me at first. But it's something I want to dangle in front of people for them to go explore what that means in that book.
It's similar to the quote that I've heard, everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die.
Yeah, I could see that.
And so like we seek these things, but you know, to your point, like, yeah, I think that's what I wanted to say there.
Yeah.
Death is an interesting concept altogether. And mm-hmm. I think if you don't experience it earlier in life, it hits you even worse, I think, the mm-hmm. older you get. Because
mm-hmm.
I have, you know, colleagues and, you know, I wouldn't necessarily call them friends, but people that I know that in their 40s, 50s, mm-hmm. they've never had a death in their family.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, wow, like that's insane. And so, you know, in their 40s, they lose their grandparents or mm-hmm. a grandparent and they're devastated for a long time.
Yeah.
And I feel for them, right?
Because mm-hmm.
like, they've never gone through any of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, growing up as a kid, you know, growing up my whole life, you know, I've had little cousins. I've had, you know, uncles and aunts and really close friends to go. My dad,
mm-hmm.
grandparents. Like, it just, I don't know if it makes you cold, but it makes you more aware.
Yeah.
That life is life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're all headed that way.
Yep.
And it's crazy to think that you're not dying. And well, there's that quote, right? Like I'm trying to bring too many thoughts in my head right now. The original thought that I had was, you have to be aware that you're dying every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And it sometimes people don't start living until they're told you have a month to live.
Right. It's the Stoic quote of, you could leave right now. Let that say, that influence and influence what you say and do.
Yeah. You say and do.
Yeah. And maybe that's why we're such big fans of Stoicism, because the Stoics actively meditated on death. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone should, because especially if you're scared of it, you should definitely do it.
Yeah.
What's the Campbell quote? The cave you're afraid to enter holds the treasure you seek. Big fan of that quote.
I'm trying to remember the one where it talks about, like, you know, most people die twice.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more to that.
Right.
But essentially, you know, you get to your 20s and, like, you give up and, like, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the life, you're just existing. You're not really living.
Right.
And then you actually die.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other quote, the opposite is, you know, most people are born twice.
Mm-hmm.
When you're born physically, and then when you're born because you know what you were meant to live for.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. And finding that meaning is actually finding that meaning. It's not going to be given to you. You have to go search it out.
No, not at all. Not at all. Yeah. And sometimes, like, depending on the family you're born into,
mm-hmm.
you're forced to believe that this is your life.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily the case. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, growing up the way I grew up and being born the way I was born, I don't know if that made sense, but what I'm getting at is the situation that I was put in
mm-hmm.
when I was a kid, the timeline that I had to follow, like that I was supposed to follow, was not the life that I'm living today.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of peers who decided to say, you know what, I was born into this. Now I must live this timeline that was, you know, put in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case.
Right.
Like, you have to come alive and say, I refuse to live the life that I was told I was supposed to live.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go live the life that I want to live.
Right.
And I feel like most people don't do that.
Yeah. It's pick your suffering. Do you want to suffer because you feel like you have to be on this path? Or do you want to suffer because you're going to go through the effort of creating your own path?
Yeah. And I think, I just wish... And again, not that I have like the best thinking in the world, like neither do you, neither do I.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to just the Stoic philosophy, and when it comes to certain philosophies and just ways of thinking that we have,
mm-hmm.
I wish I could put that on other people's, like find a way to give that to other people.
Yeah.
And like, you can't, like mm-hmm. they have to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
You can recommend them books, you can recommend them videos, you can recommend them thousands of things,
right?
Unless they consume it and actually go through it.
Right. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I just wish we had more people, whether it be our followers, whether it be, you know, our friends that could find ways to exponentially make a difference in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know. And again, it's maybe my pessimistic way of seeing things right now. I just don't know if we have enough leaders in this world that are out there trying to make a difference.
I agree. I do believe that there are a lot, and I think a lot of them actually run in our circle, because those are the types of people we want to be. And I think it tends to help others gravitate towards that have similar aspirations. And, you know, everyone has heard the idea of, you find your tribe and make sure you're joining a good tribe.
Yeah.
It's been an interesting journey, I think, for both of us, because even since we started the show, are we almost coming up on 2 years?
Yeah, man.
Holy shit. I know I've grown a ton as a person. I know you have too.
Yeah.
And it's just thinking about how much growth you and I have had in 2 years alone. If you think about continuing on that rate of growth over the next 10 years, 20 years, imagine the kind of people we can be. Or imagine, you know, for those of you listening, imagine how much you've grown in a short period of time, and then think about the effort it took to do that. But think about being able to apply that effort across a longer period of time and think about the person you can be on the other side. And to me, just knowing that person, that version of me exists out there, is enough reason for me to pursue it. Just knowing that it's who I could be. So I'm morally obligated to do that.
I would encourage you, if you're listening, to grab a sheet of paper and write down like the things that you were doing 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever the case mm-hmm. is. Because you would be, unless you see it on paper, it's hard to really remember the type of person you were
mm-hmm.
X number of years ago.
Yep.
And then think about the goals that you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. There's actually a great Utility by Jordan Peterson that I would recommend, or a great tool. It's called Self-Authoring, and I would encourage everyone to check that out. I think it's like $30. You could probably, I think Michaela Peterson has a code you could check out for a discount, but it's highly worth it. It'll make you go through your past, your present, and what you want in the future, and how to orient your life in such a way to achieve those things. Very worth it. Like, I'm going on my vacation starting next Friday, and that's, I plan to do it again, because I'm like, all right, this is my time to decompress, kind of reorient myself and recalibrate. So I need to do this to make sure I know exactly what I'm aiming at in my life.
Yeah.
And how I'm going to do it, and how I'm going to set up the systems to make that happen.
I know we've talked about that in the past, the whole recalibration thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's super critical.
Yeah, I do it at least once a year.
Yeah, because we change as people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's normal.
Yeah, goals change, your mindset changes, and you have to reorient, or you're going to be like, wait, where the hell am I?
I always get, I don't know if upset is the right word, maybe like, whatever upset is a few levels down,
mm-hmm.
that's the word I'm trying to look for.
Okay.
But when people say like, you've changed, mm-hmm. we're not the same person. It's like, that's the fucking point.
Right. I shouldn't be. I'm glad. That's a compliment.
Yeah. And it's just, again, it's a little irritating because some people just don't get it. Mm-hmm. They want you to be the same person forever.
Yeah.
Or they want you to be the same kid or this or that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm referring to sometimes family.
Yeah. Right?
They'll say that. Or really close friends.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, look, bro, like, I love you, dude, but like, you need to understand that the person I used to be was the person I am today, but I'm a little bit elevated.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit, you know, moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
Now, granted, if I was, you know, with a bunch of vices, mm-hmm. and I was going in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Then sure, call me out on my shit and tell me, hey, you've changed for the worse.
Right.
But just because I'm a different person to who I used to be, and you might not necessarily like it, doesn't mean I made the wrong choices.
Yeah, I'm thinking specifically for me of a close friend that I have, and I still consider them a close friend, but I can absolutely tell we've drifted apart because of who I've changed into as a person.
Yeah.
Because they've still got a bit of a naive mindset about reality, and there's a quote by Ayn Rand I saw this morning that I love, is you can ignore reality, but you can't ignore the consequences of ignoring reality. And to me, that's where I feel we've differed, is they tend to ignore reality and I do not.
Yeah.
But that's okay. Like, listen, everyone's on their own journey and I will still always love and care for them, but they might not appreciate who I've become. That's okay.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be interesting. Sorry.
Very good.
I just kicked Randy under the table.
Yeah. He's trying to play footsies with me.
When we go into the anarchist stuff and like the government, there's no government,
mm-hmm.
I feel like there's going to be a little bit of tension there,
yep.
but I'm excited to explore that.
Yeah. It's something that I don't ever expect or even want to happen overnight. It's something that needs to happen gradually if we're going to maintain any kind of order. But I do think the slow elimination of unnecessary government intervention into human beings' lives is absolutely necessary.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. I was just referring more towards the conversation between you, Randy, and me, Fernando.
Oh, yeah.
I'm interested to know, like, how that dynamic's going to go.
Uh-huh.
Because again, you're saying, like, you know, people drift apart from what certain direction.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy to think, because as you were talking about the leadership thing, like, go out there and, like, you know, find more people that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, fuck, I don't know if I want Randy to go out there and people with government's bad.
Sure.
Like, that was, like, the thought process that I was going through, right?
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, like, I think it's healthy to have these deep conversations,
mm-hmm.
because you're going in a certain direction, I'm going in a certain direction,
mm-hmm.
and they're not necessarily like opposite directions, but they're just different ideologies and different ways of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to have like the whole red pill versus blue pill. Like, let's try to make a purple pill that we can, you know, find.
Yeah, I get where you're going. I would say I'm white pilled. In the sense that I have extreme optimism for the future, but I do believe things are going to get incredibly worse before that happens.
I would think so too.
Yeah. And I mean, we're seeing it every day. Things are getting more and more tense.
Well, you look at history and you look at the timing of how things were happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the 40s, we went into war,
mm-hmm.
and then we had the depressions.
Yep. Vietnam, and Korea. Then,
yeah. So it's like problem, war, boom. And then again and again and again.
Yeah. Well, it's the whole idea of, you know, hard times make strong men. Strong men make for good times. Good times make for weak men. Weak men make for hard times.
Yep. Yep.
And it's the cycle of that.
Over and over.
Yeah.
From the very beginning of time.
Yeah.
And it's never going to end. We can do everything we want, but at the end of the day, like, mm-hmm. history is what history is.
Yeah.
and people act the way they act until, unless we get robots in here,
mm-hmm.
and those algorithms and those whatever the hell that, what am I thinking of, the technology and the programming of those robots.
Yeah, the AI.
It's still being driven by people. Yeah. So at the end of the day, who knows, maybe we get eliminated by robots and the robots end up thinking the way people thought because of the AI.
Yeah, well, one thing that I never considered until it was pointed out to me a few years ago was that AI is going to be biased by whoever created the AI.
Correct.
Like, you can't create an unbiased AI. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. And it's...
because a perfect AI who would consider every single thought and do every single thing that could potentially be done
mm-hmm.
would be a rock.
Yeah.
Because doing nothing is doing, you know, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, doing nothing is still disappointing someone because mm-hmm. you didn't do something.
Right.
So the perfect AI is not existing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. Like, maybe it's a cynical way of thinking of it, but at the end, someone has to be upset.
Mm-hmm.
And from an AI perspective, it's going to be biased.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and it's always important to understand where your biases are too.
Yeah.
Because if you don't know where you're biased, you're extremely subject to influence.
Yeah.
And like, I know I have biases. Like, I will openly admit that I'm even attracted to the idea of anarcho-capitalism because I'm in general just a revolutionary and radical thinker. And I like to challenge status quos. That's just part of my personality. And because I'm aware of that bias, I am generally treading caution with even embracing the idea of anarcho-capitalism because it's such a fun idea to me. And I'm like, okay, we need to really think about this.
Yeah.
And,
that's why you have me as a friend.
Right. Right. And, I do value having opinions that challenge mine because that's more important than having people that are just going to be in a circle jerk together.
And I feel like that's where progress is made.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a groupthink mm-hmm. or a think tank, right, and it's all the same thing, you're really not doing much.
Right.
Like, you have to have people who, like, from a population standpoint, that represent, like, different thoughts.
Right.
And if you don't have that, like...
Yeah, calm seas do not make good sailors.
Yeah. Well, that, but also in regards to, if you have a bunch of captains in your boat
mm-hmm.
and you don't have a person who's willing to, you know, throw out the water, and another person who's willing to make the knots, and another person who's willing to jump out in the water and bring something in, like, I don't know all the different positions in a boat.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that diversity to mm-hmm. do all those different roles, you're not going to be able to sail a fucking boat.
Right.
Because you're going to have 10 people saying, go that way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, somebody tie the stuff and somebody do the sails. Like, no one's going to do anything.
Right, right. And it's important to have that dissident nature in people. My hero, as a lot of people know now, is Socrates, because he was willing to stand up and challenge the status quo and be like, hey, no one is thinking about this stuff. Like, why are we not talking about what it means to be a good person and have a good life? Why are we not talking what justice really means and good and the soul and death? Why are we not talking about these ideas and how we can live a life that follows a philosophy that not only benefits us, but benefits the world around us?
It's a lot of work.
It is. But that's the reason a lot of people get turned off to it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's the reason.
Yeah.
Because people don't want to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
It requires you to be a better person.
Yeah.
To be able to think about these things.
To think and to have courage to stand up if you disagree with something and be willing to be wrong and to have your mind changed. Those are, it's hard enough to have the courage to actively stand up against the majority. And it takes even more courage to accept when you are wrong. Or be willing to keep fighting if you have not been proven wrong.
And that's the hardest part about philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Because what is wrong?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, that's why I point to Socrates.
Well, it goes back to, like, your own, the moral compass, or the moral compass that you're following.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we could have different calibrated, like, I want to go north, you want to go south.
Right.
And, like, we're never going to agree to who's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
What was I going with this thought? Saying that you're wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or admitting that you're wrong. When it comes to philosophy, like, sometimes the difficult part is you hit a stalemate, because the only way for you to say I'm wrong or you're wrong
mm-hmm.
is to agree that one of you is right. And to agree that one of you is right requires the other person to lose. But what I'm getting at is philosophy can be an infinite. No one's ever going to be right.
Mm.
And no one's ever going to be wrong.
Sure.
But when it comes to, you know, is this color blue? Is this color red? And you say it's purple. Like, sorry, Randy, this is blue. Like, you're wrong.
Yeah.
Like, that's easier. It's more tangible to say that you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to philosophy, like, I'm willing to fucking die here, man. Like, I'm not wrong. Like, mm-hmm. show me how I'm wrong. And sometimes it's impossible to prove another person's philosophy to be incorrect. Does that make sense?
Sometimes, but generally there is a, I would stand to reason that there is an objective truth that can be reached. But it does take challenging dialogue and hard questions that need to be answered and real thought that needs to be applied. Because, like, I can objectively say that Marxism is both evil and stupid.
But to whose ideology and whose compass?
Well, to no ideology. Again, I think ideology in and of itself is
maybe,
evil.
Maybe that's the wrong word. Maybe ideology is the wrong word. I'm just saying, like, framework of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm lost for words today.
Well, I can say that Marxism is objectively wrong, A, because they have no concept of actual economy. Like, Marx literally made up ideas about the economy that are just not true.
I would agree that Marxism is wrong.
Yeah.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
And that's just my example. I'm saying, hey, we can objectively say that some are wrong, and there are others that we should apply that same kind of inquiry into.
But do you don't think that a Marxist would use that same logic with you? Whatever you're standing behind?
Well, I would argue that the people that have been able to apply Marxism on a global scale have been the biggest tyrants in human history. And even Mao was quoted as saying Marxism is brutal. Like, he was vocal about Marxism meaning to subjugate the masses. Yeah. And even Marx knew that. Marx used to write poetry.
Let's use a different example.
Sure.
Nature versus nurture.
What do you mean?
Like, you're a parent, and you either, as a parent, you're going to mold your kid to do these certain things,
mm-hmm.
by maybe not forcing them, but coercing them to do all these different, you know, sports or read these books, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
That's the nurture part, right?
Yeah.
Well, nature is more like, hey, go and do your thing. But if I'm behind the, hey, I'm going to just stay back as long as they're fed and as long as they're, you know, being taken care of, like, from a home perspective,
mm-hmm.
everything else, whatever they end up becoming, fuck it. Like, that's all they're then.
Right.
And that's what I'm getting at. Like,
well, both play a role in reality.
But they do. But what if I'm only nature and you're only nurture? We're going to argue back and forth. But eventually we're going to say, you know what? Like, it is what it is. We can't prove that one of us is wrong.
Well, we can prove that both of us are wrong and say that we're both right at the same time.
Correct.
Which goes to say that both exist into some capacity, but that capacity is independent of either or neither being existent.
But that's what I was getting at when we started this conversation about, you know, sorry we're making you guys listen to this shit.
this is how we talk normally.
This is how we talk normally, yeah. The whole idea of philosophy, and mm-hmm. one philosophy being wrong, one being correct.
Uh-huh.
The philosophy of nature versus nurture, we're both right, we're both wrong.
Well, I would say that the idea of,
like, we can't choose just one of them, right?
Right, right. So the idea of nature versus nurture is not that there's one that dominates over the other. It's that both exist in some capacity.
And when it comes to philosophy, you don't think it's the same thing applies?
No.
Okay.
Because we can reach the truth in some way if we're willing to dialogue about it. Here's where I think
you see what I'm saying to say that, right?
Yeah, you're saying that there are some people who, well, I'm going to frame it in my way, and you tell me if I'm wrong or not. Some people will believe in objective truth, and others will not.
Correct.
I believe there is objective truth.
Yes.
To say that there's not objective truth is an objective truth, which means that you're contradicting yourself.
Yes.
So there's one that's right and one that's wrong.
Right, but like. The other person believes it not to be true.
That doesn't make them right.
Yeah. I guess you're right in that sense.
See, we reached a conclusion.
It just sucks, man. Like, sometimes you talk with people who just don't see it that way. And it doesn't matter how much logic and how much you bring to the table, like, they refuse.
Right. Well, and that's why you can't just tell them that they're wrong. You have to help them. You have to ask, that's why, again, why I'm such a fan of Socrates. He didn't tell people what to think. He taught them how to think. And all you have to do is ask enough questions, and suddenly people realize they don't understand where they stand.
Yeah. And then they get upset. Like, you know what? I'm going to drop this.
Right.
And then he did nothing. But right. Piss him off.
Yeah. And so like.
And they're unhappy and you're unhappy.
Right. So my way of approaching those situations is to just approach from empathy. And I don't make, yeah. I don't make any assertions generally. I will just ask them questions to make them think about their position. But yes, it does tend to infuriate people, but sometimes they'll come back and say like, wow, I finally thought about this. And yeah, that makes sense. I do that all the time. Sometimes people will challenge me. I'll say, hey, you know what? I hadn't thought about it like that, but you're right. That makes a lot of sense when you frame it in this context.
Yeah.
It's the being willing to let go of your ego and admit when you're wrong and be willing to change your mind.
100%.
Yeah.
It's just so fun. It's frustrating when people, maybe I do this myself too, but I just don't notice it.
Mm-hmm.
When people are just not willing to ask themselves the questions.
Yeah.
To help us get to a conclusion.
Because
I don't know if they feel threatened and they kind of see it in the future they're about to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And they just give up.
Right.
Or they just refuse to want to find a life or live in a life where the things that they believed so strongly to be true may be incorrect.
Yeah.
And like, it's tough. Like, I've been there before and I've been wrong plenty of times and I'm going to continue to be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it just makes, I don't know. I just wish more people were a little bit more logical.
Yeah. Well, and Aristotle has a great quote too, which is, it takes a strong mind to entertain a thought without accepting it. But that's the kind of people we need to be. We need to be willing to entertain thoughts and think about them, even if we don't immediately accept them, and be willing to not accept them even after we've entertained it, because we have a better questions to ask that challenge the authority of that supposition.
Yeah. I think that's a good closing.
Sure. I like it.
Cool. Hope you guys are well and you got all taken care of yourselves, right?
Yeah. Okay. Taking care of yourselves. Yep.
I lost my train of thought there as I was talking. Cool. Thank you. If you are still listening and you made it to the end of the podcast, we ask that you continue to share this podcast with your friends and family. And if you want to engage with us, feel free to reach out to us through social media.
Yep.
Or social media is the only way.
Probably best way.
Yeah, cool. Y'all take care.
See ya.